Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-7102. Antonio Hester and Dale Williams, father of Antonio Hester, versus District of Columbia and Robert C. Rice, Ph.D., Official Superintendent, District of Columbia Public Schools Appellant. Ms. Connolly for the appellant, Ms. Aguilar for the appellees.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Tolman. I'm the professor of law and supervising attorney for Mr. Agbara from the University of the District of Columbia, David A. Clark School of Law, and we're happy to be with you this morning.
Thank you. Yes.
May it please the court, my name is Mary Connolly. I represent the District of Columbia appellants. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The district court here ordered the district to provide Mr. Hester with 5 years of compensatory education for the period of time in which Mr. Hester was incarcerated in a state prison in Maryland. The district was not given access to Mr. Hester to provide the services in the hearing officer's decision. Maryland provided Mr. Hester with services under IDEA, and Mr. Hester never challenged the services that Maryland provided in proceedings in Maryland. The district court's decision cannot stand.
I think you left out one fact that's relevant, which is the original 2001 hearing officer decision indicated that DCPS shall forward a letter to said persons, namely in the Maryland correctional system, to inform them of Antonio's special education needs. Was that ever done?
There's nothing in the record that indicates that.
So
that
we have to assume that it wasn't done. And
correct.
Isn't that a violation of the 2001 hearing officer decision?
The district submits that it could not comply with the hearing officer's decision, and that inability.
Let me ask you one question there. It was known at the time the hearing officer decision that Mr. Hester was incarcerated, correct?
That's correct.
In Maryland?
Yes.
And under the decision, DCPS agreed or was required to inform the Maryland correctional officials of the fact that CLC would provide the services, correct?
That's correct.
And that was never done, even though letters were sent to the DCPS, correct?
That was not done. However, there's no question based on the record.
And if it had been done, it's possible, at least theoretically, that Maryland would have allowed CLC to provide the services. We just don't know, right?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
Why? How do we know?
The reason is because the record clearly shows that CLC, which was representing the district and was the agreed-upon provider.
That's true, why didn't the original order say that? The original order clearly distinguished between DCPS and the CLC.
Well, the original order said that the services were to be provided through CLC. And if we look at Maryland's IEP meeting notes, it's clear that Maryland prison officials referred to DCPS and CLC interchangeably. And there's no question that Maryland prison officials, in determining that they would not give CLC access, were denying that access to DCPS. The Maryland record, the Maryland prison officials' IEP meeting notes state quite unequivocally that Maryland, not DCPS, was to provide services, that it believed that DC had no jurisdiction to provide services, and that Maryland.
I think what you're arguing is it would have been fruitless for DCPS to do what it was required to do by the 2001 hearing officer.
That's correct.
But you agree that the letter wasn't sent by DCPS?
Yes, there's nothing in the record that indicates it was sent, and therefore.
Let me ask you, the district court relies on the fact that the district did not dispute that the 2001 hearing officer decision, which incorporated the party's agreement, was a consent order. and the district court went on to analyze it in that light, and also that the district did not respond to the argument that the parties had agreed or contemplated in the future that if the DC couldn't provide services while Mr. Hester was incarcerated, they would do so afterward. Aren't you therefore limited in what you can argue before us?
I don't think that the district conceded either of those points. First of all,
in your brief, you say even if it's a consent order, you don't argue that it wasn't a consent order.
There are no decisions that hold that an administrative decision may be enforced by a district court as a consent order. And what
there's nothing that would prevent the district court from doing that, is that correct? In other words, it's an agreement entered into the parties. And my question really is, if the district wanted to be relieved in some manner from that agreement, under the IDEA, what procedures are available to you?
The question that was presented in the complaint that Mr. Hester filed was whether the district violated IDEA by its inability to comply with the hearing officer's decision. And in addition, the question that's presented on appeal is whether the district's inability to comply with the hearing officer's decision violated IDEA, and whether the equitable relief ordered by the court also, whether that complies with equitable principles under IDEA.
My questions are really going to sort of these procedural points about a motion for summary judgment was filed. The district court invoked the local rules and basically decided that since the district hadn't contested certain points, the district court was justified in treating those points as conceded.
Well, I'd like, if I could, to address the second point first, which is the court's determination that the district explicitly agreed to provide the services on Mr. Hester's release if it couldn't do so while he was incarcerated. The court erroneously found that that was undisputed based upon its determination that Mr. Hester made that assertion and that the district didn't dispute it, and the court relied upon Local Rule 7. But as we showed in our brief, that assertion by Mr. Hester was never made in his statement of undisputed facts. It was an assertion that was made in his...
You make that point at the end of footnote 14. I agree you make that point, and that's a powerful point. You earlier make the point that this assertion is not a fact because it is not supported by competent evidence. That's a non sequitur, isn't it? If someone filing a motion for summary judgment lists as an undisputed fact A, and the other side does not respond to it, it is irrelevant as to what evidence supports it or not doesn't support it. So that's a non sequitur, it seems to me. Isn't that correct?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor.
It's not a non-sequitur?
Well,
this assertion is not a fact because it is not supported by competent evidence.
It's an assertion that was made in Mr. Hester's argument.
But if it was a statement, let's assume it's a statement of undisputed facts connected to a motion for summary judgment. And if the other side, you, do not dispute it, it's irrelevant as to whether there's any evidence to support it or not. Isn't that correct?
That would be true if it was...
Then your statement is a non sequitur. I don't know who wrote it, but it's a non sequitur. Now, you get to the second sentence, it's a much more powerful point. Hester made no such assertion in his statement of undisputed facts in support of his motion for summary judgment. If you're right about that, which I think you are, then that isn't... it can't be put to you as an undisputed fact.
That's correct.
I think I understand that point. So I don't see it was a statement of undisputed fact because he did not put it in his
right. Oh, I understand your point.
In other words, the first part of your first argument is a non sequitur. Your second argument sounds a powerful one to me.
Okay.
I'll ask counsel on the other side.
I'd like to return to Judge Rogers' other point about the whether the district did not dispute that this was a consent order. And the district's argument is that, that number one, that the decision, whether or not the district violated IDEA by failing to comply with the consent decree, has to be analyzed under IDEA. This is not a mere contract. But in addition, even if this were to be analyzed under consent decree principles, the court's order still cannot stand. And I think that we made both of those arguments below, and those are the arguments that we make on appeal. I'd like, if I could, to address the equitable relief that was ordered by the court.
Can I ask you just one question before you do that? If Maryland had provided no educational services, would you have the same argument?
Yes, we would, because Maryland was obligated to provide the services. On the equitable relief that was ordered.
That's on the statute, but if you have a contract whereby you're obliged to provide the services, then the fact that then you're bound by your contract, right? Which is your argument that the consent decree should be interpreted as contract?
Our argument is that the, as I had said, we made two arguments. One is that,
yes. I'm talking about the second.
Right, but our argument would be that even if Maryland didn't provide services, it was impossible for the district to provide them. On the equitable relief portion of the court's order, I think it's pretty obvious that that cannot stand, that the court cannot, under basic principles of equitable relief, order the district to provide compensatory education to compensate Mr. Hester for the period of time in which he was in a Maryland prison. Maryland was providing Mr. Hester with services, and Mr. Hester did not give the district access, and Mr. Hester never challenged those proceedings in Maryland. Under this court's decision.
Counsel, let me, I don't understand it. Suppose the consent decree specifically said, or the what you call a contract said, that no matter what Maryland does, D.C. will provide added services when and if he is released from incarceration in Maryland. There's no question you'd be obliged to do it, wouldn't you?
That's possible, but that's not the question here.
Possible.
Because the district
possible.
Didn't. The district did not agree to provide services upon Mr. Hester's release.
Well, that's just, is that the issue on the interpretation of the consent decree?
That is the issue. But I think.
But if Maryland, excuse me, if D.C. had agreed to do that, then there'd be no question that it could be enforced in this court, right?
If it was being enforced as a contract. But we're also considering whether the court correctly determined that the district violated IDEA and correctly ordered equitable relief. The court just didn't enforce a contract. The court ordered 5 years of compensatory education to compensate Mr. Hester for services. And under this court's decision in Reed, and under decisions of other circuits, under equitable relief, under IDEA, a court cannot order equitable relief in which a state is ordered to compensate an individual for purported inadequacies by the state that had responsibility.
The court certainly could do so if there was a violation of contract, couldn't it? Forget the statute. If there is a contract obliging the district to provide the services and properly interpreted means that they're obliged to provide the services after release, then there's no question it could be enforced, is there?
That's a separate question from whether the district can be ordered to compensate Mr. Hester during the period of time in which Mr. Hester was incarcerated in Maryland.
I don't understand.
The district court ordered the district.
I don't understand, counsel. If the consent decree, interpreted as a contract, obliges the district to provide the services even after Mr. Hester is released, then it could be enforced by the court, could it not?
If the district had agreed to provide services after his release.
Put aside the statute, then. Everything depends on interpretation of the, quote, agreement or consent decree.
In this case?
Yes.
No, it does not.
Why?
Because.
You mean the consent decree is illegal under the statute? Is that your argument?
No, that is not our argument, Your Honor. The questions are whether this was brought as an IDEA action in which Mr. Hester alleged that the district violated IDEA by its inability to comply with the hearing officer's decision. Whether or not that's
true. Separate arguments. One is the statutory argument, but as I understand Appellees, they said they rely on the consent decree, not the statute.
And the court ordered relief under IDEA and found a violation of IDEA. This is not
putting words in your mouth, but I want to be clear if I understand it. As to the consent order, you're saying that the district court erred for a series of different reasons, law and fact, in interpreting the scope of the agreement to encompass services after release.
That's correct.
That's your basic argument there. And then secondly, you're saying just a violation of law in terms of the nature of the equitable relief that was awarded.
Right. And in addition, that the court, there was also an error of law in the court finding that the district violated IDEA by not complying with the hearing officer's decision.
Well, suppose the Maryland authorities had allowed DC officials, CLC, to provide the educational services. And suppose further that that didn't happen, that DC and CLC did not do that, even though Maryland was allowing them to do that. Assume that went on for 5 years. In that case, would the district court have the authority to order this kind of relief?
I think that the district could not argue that it was impossible to comply with the hearing officer's decision.
What's the answer to my question?
As to whether the district could order compensatory education, I don't know the answer to that, because the district was not obligated to provide the services. I would think that if it agreed to provide the services, that the court could, as a matter of contract, could enforce it. But in this case, where the district had no obligation to provide the services during that period of time,
the district court relied on the residency law of the District of Columbia in interpreting your obligation. And do the DC public schools regulations under IDEA address this issue of when a DC resident is incarcerated outside of the district?
They don't address specifically that situation. However, IDEA itself refers to the obligation to provide a FAPE to a student residing in the state. IDEA regulations also discuss the obligation of a state to provide services, that it may delegate its responsibility to provide services to prisons in the state. In addition, DCPS regs define residency and the obligation to provide services as to a student who is residing in the state. There's also an IDEA regulation that states...
All this is explanation of why the original agreement shouldn't have been entered into by DC. But given that it was, I'm not sure why any of that's particularly relevant.
Well, the fact that the district entered into this agreement, it does not show that there is been an intentional relinquishment by the district of its argument that it did not have an obligation to provide.
So at the time DC entered into the original agreement, it knew that it wouldn't comply because Mr. Hester was incarcerated in Maryland, but it still entered into the agreement anyway?
No, there's no evidence that the district entered into the agreement.
That's the logical implication of your argument.
The point, if I'm not being clear enough, the point that I'm trying to make is that the court here, in ordering compensatory education for a five-year period when Mr. Hester was incarcerated in a Maryland prison, that the district's agreement to enter into an agreement to provide services, which is premised upon access to Mr. Hester in Maryland, does not constitute a waiver or show that we intentionally relinquished the law or opportunity to argue that we didn't have an obligation or that the court could not find the district liable for any inadequacies by Maryland during that period of time.
I think what you're arguing is that even though we agreed to do this, we didn't have to do it.
That's correct.
All right, why don't we hear from that?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. we have agreement. The District of Columbia and HESTA entered into agreement. It is enforceable. It is binding. The agreement was for compensatory education and nothing more, just compensatory education.
But there are terms that say it was an agreement while he was incarcerated.
Yes, because the parties did anticipate that the District of Columbia would do what it was required to do under the consent order. We did anticipate that if the District of Columbia had followed the consent order requirements, that Hester might be able to get compensatory education during the period he was incarcerated. Now, I want to refer the court to the agreement. As I said, this is just for compensatory education. We didn't require the District of Columbia to provide special education to Antonio Hester. Antonio Hester was a student in the District of Columbia, a resident in the District of Columbia. His father lived in the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia identified Antonio as eligible for special education. They provided him with special education. The first IEP that District of Columbia developed for Hester was in 1994, and then on May 10, 2000, they developed another IEP. Clearly, the District of Columbia believed that Antonio was eligible for compensatory education. Now, he was arrested in Maryland. He was incarcerated in Maryland. That was on April 19th. April 27, Antonio Hester initiated a complaint, a due process complaint, for compensatory education because of many years the District of Columbia had failed to provide him with fair. And also, the District of Columbia had not implemented the May 2000 IEP. That was the period. Going backward, not going forward, going backward was what Antonio decided that the District of Columbia needed to compensate him for. The fact that Antonio was in jail was well known to the District of Columbia. That was clear. We didn't hide it. The District of Columbia knew where Antonio was. When District of Columbia entered into the compensatory agreement, they knew the possibility that Antonio would receive compensatory education from the district while he was in jail. Now,
let me ask you, when he requested the due process hearing, alleging violations of the statute, he requested that the court order the public schools to comply with the 2001 hearing officer decision and either negotiate with Maryland to obtain access to return him to a D.C. correctional facility. And then he sought 8 years compensatory education. So you're saying that he was seeking relief both under the agreement and under the statute?
No. The only relief after the consent order was entered into that Antonio looked to the District of Columbia to fulfill was compensatory education, period. That was the only obligation the district owed under that consent order. And that is all that Antonio is looking for.
Can I ask you one question about the consent order, as you term it? The district court found that the consent order contemplated that if services could not be provided while Mr. Hester was incarcerated in Maryland, that the services would be provided after release. I don't see anything like that in the consent order. Are you defending that part of the district court's decision?
Yes, I'm defending that part of the decision. Now, it is not explicit in the consent order, but the simple fact is that we did anticipate that there might be a problem getting access into Maryland. I will refer the court to appendix. Appendix 72, where the consent order required the representative of Antonio to inform the District of Columbia of persons at MCT who might be able to grant access. The reason for that particular...
I agree with you that that's a stronger argument in terms of basing it in the language of the consent order, but I don't see anything in the consent order that suggests that the service, that it was contemplated, at least in the terms of the order, that the district would provide the services after release if it was unable to provide the services while Mr. Hester was incarcerated. You agree that's not in the terms of the order?
Yes.
Okay.
But from the circumstances of the order,
Right. I understand that it was contemplated, and I've read the hearing officer transcript where it was asserted that it was contemplated, but I just want to talk about the terms of the order. Can I ask you another question, which is the district responds on the terms of the order, where you say the district had a responsibility under the order to forward letters or send letters to the Maryland officials. The district responds, as I understand it, that CLC was the representative of the district for these purposes. And because CLC contacted the Maryland authorities, that was sufficient. Can you respond to that part of their argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The District of Columbia and CLC are separate entities. The consent order treated them as such. CLC came into the picture after the District of Columbia and Hester had already agreed to the basic compensatory education. The agreement was already in place. The reason CLC was brought into the agreement was because the District of Columbia admitted that it couldn't provide services to Antonio because it didn't have in place any mechanism to do that. CLC, when we suggested CLC, the district initially opposed it. Now, we made a decision. There was a hearing on May the 31st. There was a hearing to determine whether CLC would be able to provide it, whether CLC was an appropriate provider. And that decision was made. Because that decision was made, it didn't show that CLC was the agent of the District of Columbia. As a matter of fact,
it did or did not?
It didn't show that the CLC was an independent contractor, Your Honor. Independent contractor. DCPS opposed initially the idea that CLC would provide the services. No time did this consent order treat DCPS and CLC as one entity. Now, if CLC had been the agent of DCPS, they would be treated as one entity. To refer to the consent order, you will see that the CLC had independent obligation under the contract, under the consent order, and DCPS also had independent obligation under the contract. They are separate entities. DCPS was obligated to be the primary entity to seek assets and to secure assets. It didn't do that. We forwarded them a letter notifying them that we needed help, we needed access. The consent order required them to do something. District of Columbia failed to do anything.
Let me ask you the question whether or of what you think the court is supposed to do with the fact that we don't know what Maryland would have done had DC sent those letters that are required under the 2001 consent order. It's possible, perhaps even likely, that Maryland would have done what it did to CLC and say, no access in Maryland.
We cannot assume the outcome. District of Columbia simply predicted, because it would be convenient for them, they predicted that Maryland wouldn't do anything, therefore we wouldn't spend any money, we wouldn't spend any time. There is no reason to believe that had the District of Columbia forwarded the letter, that the outcome would still be the same. None at all. This is not a question of probability. 1% chance.
Do we know what Maryland's position was?
In the beginning, we didn't know. In the beginning,
do we know now? In the record, isn't it clear what Maryland's position was?
The record does indicate. I have to add.
What was it? What was Maryland's position?
Well, at the end, very later, Maryland refused access.
No, but why?
They cited the usual prison penological concerns and interests.
Explain that. Specifically, what was Maryland's position?
Well, they cited in general the safety and the difficulty in arranging for an outside provider to come in.
Was Maryland's position properly interpreted? Would it be any different whether DC requested or CLC? Don't we know what Maryland's position was? It wouldn't allow anybody in other than Maryland officials. Isn't that correct?
Yes, at the end, sir.
Isn't that correct? Well, if that's correct, isn't the answer to Judge Kavanaugh's question, then we know that nothing would have changed if D.C. had written a letter?
No, because I refer the court to Appendix 173. Appendix 173, CLC made it clear that when it was going through the process, it was discretionary. It was a discretion whether Maryland would allow CLC in or not. Appendix 173, where Mary Felton said that Mrs. Matthew told her that whether they will allow a third party or not is a discretionary decision. It wasn't firm because the District of Columbia didn't push them.
Well, wait a minute. I'm asking you, what is exactly Maryland's position? What was it exactly? The reasons for not allowing access were what?
The reason for not allowing access was because of concern for security of the prisoners, allowing a third party to come in.
Did Maryland not take the position that nobody but a Maryland official could come in?
They eventually did, Your Honor.
Okay, so then what good would it have done for D.C. to write a letter?
But they took that position later on. If the District of Columbia had taken the initiation to write the letter, the Maryland could perhaps have taken that position.
I would understand your position if Maryland took the position, we're not going to let a private contractor come in. Then you would have an argument, well, if D.C. had asked to come in, it might have been different. But that isn't what the record shows.
No, Your Honor, but what I'm saying is this. If DCPS had initially done what it's supposed to do, perhaps it wouldn't have created the room for Maryland to make that decision. We didn't have the opportunity. We lost some time. We lost a very valuable opportunity to influence the decision of Maryland. The District of Columbia was required to forward a letter to the to officials at MCTC. They didn't do that.
Suppose the record said, had a provision in it, suppose there was evidence in it that Maryland said, we don't care whether we get a letter from the District of Columbia or not, we're not going to allow access to CLC. Suppose that was in the record, then what would your case be?
I beg your pardon, but that is speculative, Your Honor.
I said, that's what the hypotheticals are. They're speculation. Suppose that was in the record.
Well, if that was in the record, there is another route. Another route would be for DCPS to institute IEP meeting. Now, under IEP meeting, which the consent order provided for, the IEP meeting could have decided alternative ways. The IEP meeting, which will include the parents of Antonio, teachers and other professionals, they could have decided that, well, if we couldn't get into Maryland, we would do something else. That opportunity never came up. There is that possibility.
What else would have been done?
Well, for instance, they would have delayed it. They would have delayed it, perhaps. The order itself, let me repeat again, the consent order did provide that the compensatory education which the District of Columbia owed Antonio was to run from November 4th until, the word until is there. It is very clear that the consent order did anticipate the possibility that DCPS might not allow them in. That was the reason it included the language that it did. Let me read it to Your Honor. It says here, and I quote, the parties agreed that DCPS will provide Antonio with compensatory education services effective November 2000 until the day before he starts to receive educational benefit through CLC. He never did so. Antonio never received that.
What are you reading?
Pardon me?
Where is
it's the record? Appendix 71, exactly where it says preliminary matters.
Right. But doesn't it also say that they were going to provide services while he was incarcerated?
As I said before, that language was put in there because the parties did anticipate the possibility that if the district had done what it was supposed to do, we might have gotten in. The services might have been provided to Antonio while he was in prison. But that is not a definite period. There is no way that language limited the provision of services solely to the period of time Antonio was in prison. The logic is not quite correct. For instance, suppose Antonio had been released 1 month after he was there. What about what would happen? Suppose Antonio had been released 1 month after he entered into CFC. The District of Columbia, according to this agreement, would still owe him 6 months of compensatory education, according to this particular consent order. So there is, in fact, no reason to believe that the ward, while Antonio was there, strictly limited the performance of this compensatory education to the period of incarceration. It didn't. It says until Antonio starts to receive education services. The word until continues until he begins to receive education services through CLC. It never happened. It never happened because the District of Columbia failed to comply with the express language of the consent order, which required them to forward a letter to the persons at MCTC. We cannot base this interpretation on mere speculation.
Counsel,
we have language.
Where in your brief do you emphasize the letter? Where is this point? Where is this argument about the letter?
I have it. Your Honor, I can't point to it in the brief right now, but it's in the brief, Your Honor. And if you will allow me, I will forward.
No, just tell me where it is in the brief.
It is in the brief, but I just can't point my finger to it right now.
I didn't remember it. Judge Kavanaugh, of course, focused on the appendix, but I couldn't find it in the brief.
If you will, Your Honor, I will.
You can let the clerk,
yeah,
the marshal,
yes,
know the page.
Yes.
Do you have a further argument you wish to make?
In your summary of argument, you do point out that under the agreement, the representatives of Mr. Hester were to notify DCPS whom to contact. Mr. Hester's representatives did comply, and then DCPS personnel, in contrast, took no action to comply. So I think,
thank you, Your Honor. I want to make another argument. The District Court clearly found that the District of Columbia violated the consent order. The District Court has authority under equitable power, under discretion, to order the District of Columbia to offer Antonio relief. There is no dispute that the District of Columbia violated this particular consent order. It is within the power and authority of the District Court to order appropriate relief. It turns out that the relief the District Court ordered here corresponds to the agreement already in existence. This court should affirm the decision of the District Court on two bases. One, the District of Columbia clearly violated the orders. It did violate the orders because it did not forward any letter. It didn't take any particular action to implement the education services plan in this order. Second, the District Court has authority, once it has found a violation, to fashion appropriate relief. It turns out, I repeat, that the particular relief it decided to order corresponds with the relief the plaintiffs here requested. Now, equitable relief has to address the essence of the parties' agreement. There is no doubt in this court or in the briefing that the District of Columbia and Antonio had an agreement. The agreement was entered as a consent order. That point is clear. They had an agreement. And the District Court is within its power to order relief once it has found a violation. There was a violation, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. I think we have your argument. We'll hear from the district.
Yes, I just had 2 points. We're all in agreement that the district was bound by the agreement at the time that it entered into it. I may have not been clear in response to Judge Kavanaugh's last question. I just wanted to clarify that. The second point is that I think there's no question that the district court misconstrued the agreement. Mr. Agbara concedes that there was no agreement in the hearing officer decision to provide services after Mr. Hester's release.
Well, what I tried to clarify, and maybe I didn't, was that when he filed his 2004 motion, it was both for a violation of the agreement and a violation of the statute. In other words, he was pursuing two prongs. As I hear the argument, it's that the district not only didn't provide the services it was required to, but that he had statutory rights to these services, and therefore the district court properly entered the equitable relief it did.
I think that the argument may not be entirely clear. As I understood the argument, it was that the district violated IDEA by failing to comply with the hearing officer's decision.
He wouldn't be entitled to services under the statute if it wasn't for the consent decree, would he? Because he's too old. If it was just the statute and no consent decree, he wouldn't be entitled to services.
Right, because he's 24 years old.
Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So everything has to turn on the agreement or the consent decree. Now, the thing that puzzles me is if you completely violated the consent decree, let's assume hypothetically you did. You didn't. I'm not sure this letter was ever mentioned in the brief as the key point at all. But suppose there is, and it seems to me there's a bit of an inconsistency in your opponent's argument, that they had contemplated that there wouldn't be access, and yet D.C. is at fault for not gaining access. But anyway, put that aside. Let's assume you violated the agreement. Why can't the district court order its relief as a remedy for the violation of the agreement? Not under the statute. Forget the statute.
It can't because...
It cannot?
It cannot because, as we argued in our brief, if the court is enforcing it as a consent decree, the court cannot order relief that enlarges the duties of the parties beyond what was agreed to in the agreement, and the court can't enforce the agreement that's inconsistent with what the parties agreed to.
That's puzzling me, counsel. Suppose, hypothetically, the agreement said, we will do A, B, C, and D during this period of time, and you don't do it. You say, no, the hell with them. We're not going to do it. Are you telling me the district judge can't give any relief at all? Because the time has expired now?
No. If the district just refused to comply, and it could have, that would be a different situation.
If the District of Columbia violated the contract, then the district court could order relief such as the relief it ordered?
If as is not the case here,
counsel, please, hypotheticals are always based on not the case.
Right, I understand.
Go ahead.
I understand.
I'm just trying to understand your argument on the remedy, and I don't understand it because you keep flipping back and forth between the statute and the consent decree.
The problem, frankly, Your Honor, is that the relief that was ordered here bears no relationship to the hearing officer decision. Because the court
it's the consent decree that's the key.
It's a consent decree in which the district agreed to provide certain services through CLC during Mr. Hester's incarceration.
Okay, let's assume the district violated its agreement, whole as bolus. Let's assume that. What relief can the district court give?
The district court would have to remand the case.
No. The district court has a right to give relief for violation of a contract, does it not? Forget the hearing officer. There's a consent decree. There's a contract. Let's assume the contract is palpably, directly, and unquestionably violated. What is your argument as to what the district court can do as a remedy, can give as a remedy?
Well, the district court would have to look at what violation the hearing officer's decision, the 2001 hearing officer's decision, was designed to address and order relief that is consistent with that. And here we have relief that is...
Well, they're not asking for money. They're not asking for a trip.
Well, they can't get money.
They're not asking for a trip to South America. They're asking for educational services, right?
Well, what they were asking for is that the district be ordered to provide the services upon Mr. Hester's release.
Right.
Release. And the argument that was made was that the agreement contemplated that the district agreed to do that.
Counsel, you keep fighting the hypothetical. I'm simply asking square out if there's a violation of the consent decree, assuming hypothetically there's a palpable direct violation of the consent decree. I want your explanation of why the district court couldn't give the relief it ordered.
If the district just refused to comply with the hearing officer's decision.
Please, counsel, you don't have to repeat the hypothetical.
Okay. Then the district court could still not order this relief.
Why? This relief, could it order any relief? Is it barred from any relief?
It could order some relief.
Okay, that's a key point. So the district court does have the authority, if there's a violation, as in Judge Silberman's hypothetical, if there's a violation of the consent order, the district court has the authority to issue some relief. Your point here, I believe, is that the relief was overbroad or not connected to whatever violation might be found.
That's correct.
Why do you say that? Why is it not connected to the violation?
Because the compensatory education that was ordered is for a five-year period when Mr. Hester was in a Maryland prison. Maryland was providing services. The district had no obligation to provide those services.
Counsel, you're just going back and fighting the hypothetical. That's really very annoying. We're assuming there was a violation. We're assuming there is a violation, hypothetically. Now we're focusing only on the question of what the appropriate remedy is.
Right.
And I don't understand why the district judge's order is not an appropriate remedy. If there was a violation. I understand your argument. There's no violation. It's a powerful argument. We'll have to consider it. But now there's a separate question. If there was a violation, why is the remedy inappropriate? And is that what is the scope of review of that?
Well, the scope of review is de novo as to any...
On a remedy?
As to any questions of law,
well,
that
what's the question of law about the remedy?
Well, the question is whether, as a matter of law, compensatory education can be ordered is an appropriate remedy to
for
redress
a violation of an agreement to provide compensatory education.
Right. That's right.
You can, in other words, your argument is you cannot order as a remedy compensatory education for a direct violation of an agreement to provide compensatory education. Is that correct? You heard my hypothetical. You heard my question.
A court can order compensatory education to compensate for a violation of a consent decree. If it's doing it under IDEA, then the compensatory education under this court's decision in Reed has to be appropriate.
We're not thinking about IDEA at all. We're thinking about the consent decree.
If the violation, let's assume that I don't agree with the interpretation of the consent order that the district court gave to it, but let's also assume hypothetically that the district violated the order by not contacting Maryland officials directly. Okay? What's the appropriate relief?
Well, the court would then have to consider whether the district's, the fact that the district didn't contact Maryland officials was fruitless. Because Maryland's position was known, was very clearly known. And if you look at page A95.
What about the transcript site that your counterpart gave that said that the Maryland officials said they had discretion in this circumstance, but they weren't going to exercise their discretion to allow CLC in? That sounds like there wasn't a hard and fast rule that Maryland had. Is there one that's in the record?
There is. Page A95 of the appendix. These are the notes from an IEP meeting that the Maryland prison officials had in November of 2001. In which the chair of the meeting, Ms. Matthews, stated that the purpose of the meeting was to state that the Department of Corrections Maryland State Department of Education has jurisdiction. Maryland State Department of Education will be responsible for his education, not DCPS. And then if you look at the next page.
Wait, was that page 95?
Yeah. That's page A95.
Another purpose.
That the purpose.
Develop and approve IEP, another purpose.
I think you're looking at the, are you looking at the handwritten page numbers?
Mm-hmm.
It's the typewritten number in the middle of the bottom of the page.
I'm on the typewritten 95.
Okay.
It's handwritten notes.
Yeah, the bottom four lines. The bottom four lines of page A95. Ms. Matthews also stated.
Go ahead, read it, counsel.
That the purpose was to state that DOC MSDE, which is Department of Corrections, Maryland State Department of Education, has jurisdiction. MSDE will be responsible for his education, not DCPS. And on the next page, page A96, the second full paragraph, beginning, it says, Captain Troop stated that overriding penological concerns do not allow individual access to the internet, music therapy, or non-Department of Corrections, MSDE, counseling.
And the question really is whether if DC had directly contacted the Maryland officials, they would have exercised their discretion or their policy differently.
I think it's clear from this.
You think this alone?
Well, this, and in addition to that, the testimony, the rest of the testimony of Ms. Felton, the founder of CLC, in which she describes her repeated efforts after that to get access to Ms. Hester and provide services, and she makes it very clear that she was, there was a point at which she was told unequivocally that she could not have access to Mr. Hester.
Yeah, she being the CLC representative. That's not really the question.
Well, that was before the IEP team, before these notes were written.
I want to go back to the line of questioning Judge Silverman was pursuing. Assume the district court finds a violation of the district's agreement. And then the district court comes up with its remedy. And Mr. Hester asked for a remedy involving an 8-year period. Is it your position that because the consent agreement didn't provide for an 8-year period, the district court could not provide for 8 years of relief? I mean, is that the type of argument you're making on the equitable relief? In other words, what I sort of saw the district court as saying is the district had acknowledged early on, back in before the hearing officer decision, that this Mr. Hester was eligible for compensatory education under the statute. Then the district enters into this agreement. Now the district violated this agreement. And the court says, overrules the hearing officer decision that Maryland had provided him all of the services to which he was entitled under the statute, and goes on and orders this equitable relief. And I'm just trying to understand what is the error. But I think, candidly, it's an abuse of discretion on relief, but what is the error that you see in what the district court ordered, assuming that you violated the consent order?
Well, the error, if there's an error, if the district violated the consent order and there's no question of impossibility, then as to the relief that the court could order as a remedy for that, our position is that that relief has to be appropriate under IDEA, and that the relief has to be consistent with what the 2001 decision was designed to address, and that the court could not order the relief that it ordered to effectuate that agreement.
Well, now, wait a minute. Isn't Judge Rogers correct, and that was what I was getting at, too, that the standard on a remedy is abuse of discretion, which is a very deferential standard. I would agree if the district judge had ordered the district to provide a holiday trip to Buenos Aires, that would be a problem. But I still don't understand why ordering compensatory education for a violation of agreement to provide compensatory education is an abuse of discretion.
Because under this court's decision in Reed, which deals directly with compensatory education, the compensatory education that's provided has to be determined based upon the particular facts and needs of the student to provide the student with the benefit that the student would have received had the school provided the services that it was obligated to provide in the first place. And on the record in this case, no finding can be made that what the court ordered is consistent with the principles in Reed, because what the court ordered is to make up for some purported deficiencies in services provided by Maryland when Mr. Hester never challenged those services in Maryland. The relief that was ordered by the court is an abuse of discretion because it doesn't effectuate the 2001 hearing officer's decision.
Because it's expressly based on a misinterpretation of the agreement. Right? Isn't that your strongest point, it seems,
yes,
to me, is on this, is that the district court interpreted the agreement to actually specifically contemplate services being provided after release.
Correct.
Which, in fact, is not in the agreement. So if the relief rests on that misinterpretation,
that falls. Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement.
Stand, please. This honorable court will now stand adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m.